You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Have you been seeing strange things? Things that you can't explain.
We have the ability to see what no one else can. When they lose control, they can't hide. And we see them for what they really are. You are one of the last grips.
Welcome to Grimly Speaking with Sci-Fi for Chicks on SciFiForMe.com. This is our third installation of Grimly Speaking. We're covering Season 5 of Grimm. This episode was titled Lost Boys. With me today is Cami Settle.
Hi, Maya.
Hi, and I'm Maya. And we're going to start with a really short recap of the episode. This episode was pretty straightforward. There weren't a lot of multiple storylines going on. So it's pretty easy to do a recap of. Really, we just have the Peter Pan story going on where you have these boys who, and we don't get any background on why they are out in the woods.
Yeah, I put that down to talk about in our speculations and musings section.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that aren't given in this episode, and the fact that it's only a one storyline episode, you'd think there'd be more time to give us some of that. Anyway, so we have our lost boys and mother, in air quotes, escapes. They're all chasing her, and she falls, hits her head on a concrete wall, dies, and somebody comes along in a pickup truck and finds her. Really soon, I mean really soon after she falls down and dies. She is a missing person case, been gone for 2 years. Our team of expert detectives, Nick, Hank, and Wu, who is our future detective, piece it together that she is a missing person. Of course, they don't know that she was abducted by a small gang of lost children. But they do bring in the husband, who at the time, of course, was a major suspect, and he's very distraught. And then these children, now they have no mother, they need a new mother. The young girl in the group is sick. They go for medicine, come into the spy shop, shoplift from Rosalie. She ends up giving them the medicine, and then ends up being abducted as mother, the next mother. The good part of all that was that she had her phone on and Monroe heard the whole thing happen. So he knows that she was abducted and he can
kind of piece together that pretty quickly.
Yeah. He can kind of piece together that it's probably the kids that had originally shoplifted from her the day before. So then of course the team comes in and rescues her, and then these lost children are put back into the system, sort of, except they're not back into what we think of as the regular system. They are recruited into the Vessen Army, our /mark gang, Free the Hidden Army.
The Occultatum Liberat.
Yeah. And that's basically the episode, except we have our last shot is Trouble apparently was behind door number one. And Meisner comes to her and tells her that it's time.
Right.
Yeah. And that's it.
We have a little bit about Adeline, Nick, and the baby.
Yeah, that was our subplot there.
So we had a little bit of story about Nick and Adeline. You know, he sold the house. And one thing that they covered, you know, we were wondering last week about, oh, how does he sell Juliet's house? Well, he mentions that he bought the house 6.5 years ago. So they just kind of glossed over the whole thing about whose house it was. They're moving out. They leave this beautiful bungalow to go to what looks to be an old paint warehouse, paint factory.
Turned into a fortress.
Yeah, it's a Grimm cave.
I love that.
But, you know, it seems like he's trying to protect his new child. And, of course, Adeline has to come along. And we'll get into this in a bit. But she actually may have a career offer soon to follow.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems like they're trying to figure out where this relationship is going to go. And they both acknowledge that it's pretty weird.
Yeah. The weird part about her, if she takes this, if she goes back to the firm that she left when she went to Vienna is, or Austria, sorry, would be, then what about childcare? I mean, Nick is in no position to be in charge of childcare because he's constantly running off.
Well, no, it wouldn't be Nick. It would, I mean, she would be making buku money, but it would have to be somewhere secure because this baby's going to be a target, you know, just like Diana was.
Yep. Well, and okay, let's be honest, just like anybody connected with Nick is.
Yeah. Right.
Everybody that is connected with Nick becomes a target, whether it's Monroe, Rosalie, Hank, mm-hmm. Wu. I mean, Wu was, you know, he ate the wrong cookie and then ends up eating his own couch cushions.
Just be careful of those snacks.
I know. Yeah. Don't eat other people's cookies.
Okay, well, for you, was this a hit or a miss episode?
It's a mixed bag for me. It's a hit in that it was a fun episode and, you know, it wasn't too gory because I'm not into the gory side of things. It's a miss in that some of the timeline stuff didn't make sense to me between, and we'll get into details later, but so there were some timeline issues for me. It's still really dark as far as the lighting in the episode. Yeah, it's a mixed bag for me. How about you?
This felt a lot like the old Vesson of the Week episode. You know, like they started out in the earlier seasons.
Yeah.
So each week was a new Vesson, and even though we still have that, they have tended to focus on the bigger story arcs. This one didn't seem to move those arcs forward very well, or at least very far.
Well, not until the very, very end.
Right. And they kind of gave a nod to each one, just little bits and pieces. But overall, it was an okay episode. I wouldn't say I'm over the top about it. It wasn't one of the better ones. They had some interesting characters, but for me, a little too many Peter Pan references. I mean, you know, okay, we got it. They're lost boys. But to have their escaped, abducted mother, her name was Wendy, at the end when they go back to the correctional facility for youth, the warden's name is Hook.
Hook, yes.
I mean, you know, the lead boy's name is Peter.
Yeah.
Okay, we get it, you know.
Yeah, that seemed forced to me.
Yeah, that was just a little too much. So, you know, having said that, I guess maybe we could take a quick break here and then come back to speculate further and muse a little bit about the future.
Yes.
What do you think?
Yes, our S&M's speculations and musing section when we come back.
Sci-Fi for Chicks will be right back.
Whoa, where'd you get that shirt?
Bought it at the convention last week. It's an Atomic Cotton design.
Atomic Cotton?
Yep, they got t-shirt designs from sci-fi, horror, cult films. All the shirts were really unique and fun. I had to get one.
I gotta wait for another convention, though.
Nope, AtomicCotton.com. I ordered a shirt. Shipping was super fast.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at AtomicCotton.com. Atomic Cotton. Shirts and art for fans by fans.
And we're back. Cammy Settle is still here with me. Yay!
I have not left.
And I'm Maya. And we're coming back to our S&M section, our speculations and musings,
where we
talk more details about the episode.
Right. And if you happen to have some speculations and musings, we should invite people to send those in to us. You can post your comments on scififorme.com. You can email scififorchicks@scififorme.com. Or call the hotline at 573-42-SCIFI.
And we really want to know what you do think, and we're looking for some feedback. You know, how are we doing on this podcast? Do you like what we're talking about? Are we too dry? Are we, what do you call it when you talk about other stuff? What we do on level 1177 a lot.
We don't digress.
Digress a whole lot.
Well,
there we
go. Because we're trying to keep this to a nice digestible 30 minutes.
Yeah. And you know, yeah,
we don't want to beat the dead horse.
That poor horse.
Yeah, I know. It's been beaten enough.
So some details, some musings about the episode.
Yeah. What's your beef, Maya?
Well,
talk about your beef.
Okay, I have actually several beefs. One, my first one, as I was watching the episode, was how dark it was in their house, as in Nick's house, as they were moving. Movers don't tend to like to have to pack up and carry out boxes in the dark. I know that they've sold the house and everything, but I'll bet you could still turn on the lights.
Well, there were so many windows in that place. I mean, what are they moving at night?
I don't know.
You know, this whole we've harped about this before.
Yes.
You know, neither one of us like the so dark that you can't see anything or make out what you're looking at. And you could see in the house, at least there was enough light for that. But like when Rosalie falls in the pit, you know, she falls into this trap later in the episode, and you can't see where she is. You can't tell. You can't even tell it's her for a little bit.
Well, and they set that up. I mean, you knew somebody had to fall in that. I thought it was going to be Monroe, personally.
I knew that somebody was going to fall into that pit.
Because they set it up. I mean, it was, you know.
Sure.
And okay. And then the next thing are the timeline things. There were problems with the timeline between the children. Over two years ago, they abduct Wendy's mother. And in the surveillance footage that they have about that case, that the girl looks to be as tall and as old as she does now. Did she not grow in 2 years?
Right. It's not like they're off in Never Never Land where they don't age.
Right. So, yeah. And the oldest one is driving. I could buy that now, but 2 years ago he was driving?
Right.
Yeah. So those kind of things bothered me. One of the other things that bothered me was, and this is nitpicky, I will admit that, when mother falls down the hillside and hits her head and dies and the kids come running up to her, she's barefoot. They all have brand new shoes on.
Yeah, well, I think they've kept her barefoot on purpose.
I guess
She is a prisoner, and, you know, barefoot makes it a lot harder to get away.
I guess that makes sense, except...
I mean, that's how I looked at it, was, yeah, they don't want to make it any easier for her to leave, obviously.
The other thing was I guess she was inside, okay, and they've been coming and going, because she also isn't wearing nearly as much clothing as they are. She's wearing, you know, lightweight clothing, and they've got jackets and coats and hats.
Right.
And,
well, and she still had rope marks on her wrists.
Yeah, well...
So she's been bound for 2 years. It's not like she decided to become part of the pack. I mean, they've had to keep her as a prisoner, which kind of surprised me because this oldest boy, Peter, seemed to be doing all the cooking and everybody else was doing the hunting and gathering, and they seemed fairly self-sufficient.
So why do they need a mother?
Except for bedtime stories, maybe.
Yeah. The other thing that bothered me about this was Peter is a bully. He is just a nasty bully.
Well, have you ever seen Peter Pan?
Well, but Peter Pan in the stories is our hero. He's, you know, of course, the Peter Pan stories on the superficial level are more lighthearted.
Right.
You know, you get down into the nitty gritty of it. Yeah, it's pretty sad. And but on the surface, it's kind of lighthearted. And Peter is always wanting adventures and he wants fun. And this Peter is just, he... bullies mothers and he bullies the other people there, and
it's a survival thing. You know, they did bring Peter Pan into the real world with this story, and they put that real twist on it where they have to survive. You know, this is Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's food, shelter, and clothing, and you know, those are the number one things they have to worry about every single day.
And medicine.
They haven't clearly they have not had any upbringing that taught them about who they were, what they were.
You mean as far as being Vessin? Yeah.
Or even how they have no social skills either. So they have no way to interact with the greater society as a whole. And for me, I just thought they've been in foster care and they haven't picked up any of that.
These kids
have this really skewed version of reality. You know, we don't know their background or how long they've been out on their own, but we know it's been at least 2 years. But you think that before that, they would have had some kind of formative socialization with foster parents or foster care.
I agree. They seemed very inept at dealing with all sorts of aspects of society.
Yeah.
And that was also one of the things that bothered me about the end of the episode, considering all of the things that this group of people, Nick and his crew, have done in previous seasons and previous episodes, fudging what's okay and what isn't okay. And he just let those kids go in back into the system, or so he thought they were going into the system, without giving them any kind of net or help, you know, or information about who they are and everything. And that really bothered me because
now, do you think we're going to see them again?
Yeah.
Well, see, that's
it's not going to be very pleasant.
They kind of foreshadowed that. So Rosalie's talking to Monroe and she's saying, look, these kids didn't have any clue. It wasn't just about having a clue with how to be a person or what a family is, but they've got no clue as to what they are.
Right.
They know they're different. And they were each different from each other. So did they meet in foster care in some kind of orphanage?
Maybe in like a juvenile hall or something? Or
well, I don't know that they've been in juvie before, but they've certainly had similar
pasts. How would they have connected?
Right. So maybe it was an orphanage or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know either. But okay. And one of the interesting thing was, so Rosalie says that they don't know what they are and everything. And she told them the story about the wolf and the Grimm. Mm-hmm. But then the one boy, when he sees Nick, knows, he says, it's a Grimm. He's going to cut off my head. How did he know?
It was the story.
Yeah, but he's never seen a Grimm before.
No, but remember, she described what a Grimm looks like to a Vessen.
Yeah, so and she they described, were falling asleep, you know, while she was telling the story. I don't know. I thought that was a little...
Well, apparently he was listening somehow, perhaps on a subliminal level.
Osmosis.
Yeah.
I got the information through the pillow.
But, you know, regardless, she did... At least the script provided her a vehicle to tell them about a Grimm.
Right. Yeah,
and
that's true.
And we have an audience assume that they understood what that was and remembered what it was when they were in the, when it was real life situation.
Yeah, I didn't quite make that assumption. I thought it was I thought it was a bit of a jump that they would know what a Grimm was and all of that. I didn't find that quite as believable that they would make that jump to knowing what a Grimm was just from one story as they were falling asleep to then seeing him in real life.
Yeah. Well, it was rather rushed, but it was there and it moved the story forward. Again, this is kind of that heavy-handed writing where, it happened, so now we can move on.
Yeah. Some of the other timeline stuff that bothered me was was clearly the afternoon when Rosalie was abducted, and yet when they're driving, it's clearly night.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole trying to match up the time between Monroe, Nick, and Hank searching for Rosalie and the story going on and the kids falling asleep and her cutting her ropes. And that didn't quite feel like it matched up right to me.
Yeah, she wasn't gone very long, it seemed. So it wasn't even, it was like, you know, they got her in the afternoon, they got her there after sundown, and by nightfall, the guys were on the trail.
Right.
I did like the way they used Monroe and his tracking skills. I thought that was a good call for them to take him to the morgue, and he got the scent of the other woman who was found dead at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
So he gets Wendy's scent. And, you know, it's not just a casual, I got it, let's go on. They actually showed him lifting up the sheet and sticking his head in, you know, where people actually create scents in their body.
Right.
And so I thought that was a nice realistic touch to, you know, to that that skill and that sense of his.
I kind of expected him to say something about having a hard time getting the scent because, you know, obviously she's been all cleaned up and everything and she's on a slab and I don't know what all has been done to her body already at that point. But yeah, that was a nice nod back to ways that Monroe helped and, you know, things that he's done in previous seasons. So that was good.
Right.
And I was really glad they didn't try to take away another female character because we're running out of them.
I know.
I was like, you can't take away Rosalie because we're down to two.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're down to just Adeline and Rosalie are our two main female characters now. That's it. That's all we got. Yep.
So well, trouble if they bring her back as a major.
Yeah, that's
she's
true.
She's been kind of out of the picture, but she is a major character that will come back this season.
Yeah, and we did see her at the very end, but mm-hmm. I don't yet really count her in as a part of our mm-hmm. storyline yet. Except
right.
So
yes, so we've got trouble in the prison cell at the very end. Let's talk a little bit about that since we're on her,
right.
her topic.
I was glad to see she looked actually less bloodied and damaged than Meisner did when he came out of the cell last time. And he said better, you know, that it was going better. I was like, well, right. obviously she's been holding her own because she only had what looked like a small scratch on her forehead or something.
Yeah, she had like a bruised orbit, you know, where she had like a black eye or something.
Yeah, but generally she didn't look too bad.
Right. So now what did you get from Meisner made a quick courtesy visit to Sean Renard.
Yeah.
And he told him, oh, yeah, the king had an accident. You might call it that, since he was pushed out of a helicopter by Meisner.
Yes.
But Sean had to ask a few questions, and then Meisner actually admitted that he did that.
Yes.
And that Diana was safe. He didn't give him details.
Well, he also said that it was set up by
Victor?
Victor, yeah.
Yeah, because Victor's now on the throne.
Which tells us that Victor was not dead. He was retrieved or whatever they had called it last season when Kenneth King showed up. And we all speculated, does that mean that he was offed? But apparently
so they really
not.
Never showed anything that happened to Victor. It was just kind of off camera stuff. I can't remember.
Not only was it off camera, I mean, he was just, it was Kenneth. All that we got was Kenneth saying, yes, Victor was
recalled or retrieved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
and at the time I thought, oh, that's the end of him.
Right. Right. Well, he's not dead yet.
Yes. But now he's actually the one that is. Yeah. Because we were speculating that this would mean that Sean Renard was actually the mm-hmm. next in line.
Right.
But
or
it turns
Diana.
Out he's not. Or mm-hmm. Diana. And he still doesn't know where Diana is. She's with friends.
Right. Well, it sounds to me like she's probably with Victor.
Oh, no, I don't think they would consider Victor friends.
Well,
although,
if Meisner was acting on Victor's command, right?
Well, not necessarily
and
his
he
command.
Had Diana. Well, yeah, but so he went, he off the king.
Yeah, Victor facilitated that happening. Yeah.
Okay. But to what end? So the king is dead. Diana's on the helicopter. The helicopter is also missing.
Mm-hmm.
But Meisner had to be with it when it went somewhere with Diana.
Because
he was on the helicopter.
Right. Unless they both parachuted out.
Okay. Yeah, we don't know. Maybe they haven't written that part of the story yet. But it leads us to believe that Victor choreographed everything like that.
Well, that's the only way that he wouldn't have been with the helicopter when it went somewhere would be if he had taken Diana with him and they exited the helicopter. And then, because there were two people in the front in the cockpit of the helicopter, I believe.
Yeah.
So it's possible that Meisner and Diana left and then the helicopter went on to somewhere.
Okay. So the pilot and the co-pilot just dropped them off somewhere.
Dropped them off, or they parachuted out, or yeah.
Okay, those are speculations. Yes.
Yep.
Tell us what you think, listeners.
Yeah.
We would like to know. Yeah, that's one of those mysteries that we'll see unfold. I think this season. Let's go here for a minute.
Where to where the Adeline
And Nick thing.
Yeah, in the bed.
Please tell me they are not going to do this.
They can't. Please, no, you just can't. You can't. They've been mortal enemies. I mean, mortal enemies.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. They had this really stupid conversation when they were packing up to move. Oh, you were my first. You know, it's like, really? You know, it's it ended up he was the first. Adeline was the first Volga that Nick ever witnessed.
Yes.
And she somehow from a way across the street vulgaring for who knows what reason, because
yeah, for no reason. It was a startling coffee
that he's a Grimm from way over there. So yeah, I don't know what was the purpose of her voguing anyway. It was so forced. And yeah. Then, you know, of course she says, "Well, you were my first Grimm." Sorry.
Okay, the part that made me go, "No freaking way," was when she comes out and says, "I don't want to sleep alone. Do you mind coming and sleeping in this room?" At which point I thought he's going to, like, sleep on the floor or on a sofa or on, I don't know, something. But no, he gets in bed with her. And I'm just like, oh, and how are you going to sleep now?
Yeah, I know. That was just really kind of forced, and I don't know, it reminds me of the days when she was very manipulative and acting very much the needy, you know, help me, damsel in distress kind of, really?
Yeah,
well, Nick had a good line in that section, and she said, "Yeah, well, you know, I know it's kind of weird, but I don't want to be alone tonight, and could you just sleep in our room?" And he just responds, "Well, it's beyond weird at this point." So, you know, they
Which
are
is
sleeping
true.
In the same bed, but it looks like they have their separate corners that they've gone to. You know, if I were Nick and it were me, I think I would have rolled up my mat and put it on the floor in there if I had to do something. So have we covered all the speculations? The musings? Let's talk a little bit
about
what's to
her
come.
Job offer? Adeline's job offer.
Yeah,
which, so we touched on it just barely.
Just a little bit. Yeah, I think that we're going to see her maybe even pursue her old career again this season.
I think she has to stop being so dependent on Nick, well, on everybody, right. But specifically on Nick.
Right.
The thing we didn't see even a hint of from her this week was anything of her Hexen Beast coming back. So that is still to come, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it'll come eventually. We're just not sure how or when.
You know, if Juliet returns, she is going to be so pissed that Adeline is driving her car.
Yeah, I think that would be like the clincher.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that, you know, that's what Nick just said. Yeah, you got a problem with that. He gave her the key to the car. Said, here's how you get yourself around. Go get some groceries. Use this card. I mean, he's done a lot of stuff to get them off the grid.
Yes.
And then he sends her into town in Juliet's car to get groceries. Just like, what? You know, don't you think somebody's going to recognize that car or at least know that, you know, notice you? I mean, why would you? I don't know. There were just some things that didn't quite fit.
Well, and then there's the fact that I didn't see her getting any groceries. She like went in somewhere and I think was in like a coffee shop getting coffee, but she puts Kelly into the car and there, you know, she didn't get anything.
This is true. Well, you know, girls got to go shopping.
I suspect that Adeline is very used to a nice lifestyle.
Yeah, well, I think she probably preferred staying with the royals. That's for sure.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, who wouldn't want a vintage urban life, right? I'm talking about the Grimm Cave nowadays.
You mean, it's like, the Grimm Cave. Oh.
Yeah, he said, "Well, I think I got everything that we just, our basic needs here." And he did. You know, there was a sparse table and a vintage refrigerator that looked like it was straight out of 1952 and possibly a stove. Yeah, it was. Everybody had their
The bed looked
cords.
Like it was from a military barracks or something.
Yeah, it did. It did. It's totally. With one of those mattresses that you could probably read through.
Yeah.
Wow, all the creature comforts that a girl wants. Yeah, it's pretty funny. I wonder if they had to sell that house. I wonder if they had to do full disclosure on the property.
Oh, yeah. The only way you're going to sell it with full disclosure is if it goes on to like a haunted homes tour or something.
It's a real fixer-upper. Only a We've few bullet holes and crossbow damage. And by the way, three of the neighbors were killed.
No biggie.
Other than that, it's a great little quiet neighborhood. There's nobody left.
Oh, yeah. So those other houses are going to be up for sale too because the people that lived there were all murdered.
Yep.
Oh, what a lovely neighborhood.
You know, it's just going to the dogs.
So, the other thing I wanted to touch on was the very beginning, that when they do the recap, mm-hmm. you know, getting you up to speed on what's come before, and the way they cut it, edited it together, the Latin phrase, free the hidden or whatever mm-hmm. it is, looks like it's meant to be, this is war, you know, because the way they edit it together.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's probably more telling than you might think.
Oh yeah, yeah. So they're building the Vessan army they're recruiting very young members now at an early age. They're just going to brainwash these kids to be Vessan soldiers for whatever uprising this is.
Yeah, it helps that they didn't even know what they were to begin with.
Yeah. So do you have a favorite moment, a least favorite moment in this episode?
My favorite moment, acting-wise, was the husband of Wendy when he's there to mm-hmm. identify his wife's body. Mm-hmm. I didn't know him, I didn't know her, and it still made me tear up.
Yeah, he was pretty convincing.
He did an absolutely awesome acting job. I really liked him. As far as the story in general, my favorite part, I think Monroe and Rosalie in the spice shop when they're talking about children.
Yeah.
And Monroe is saying, you know, he knows two things about children. One, they're a future and should be cherished. And the other is they're little lying bastards. Yep. And she calls him on it and says, you know, oh, so what if we have a couple of children? Oh, I'm not talking about our children. I'm talking about children in general.
Yeah. All of them besides ours, right?
Yes, yes, exactly.
I was really happy to see Rosalie kind of lose her temper today, in this episode. She finally, she's always been a pretty good character. She's always been very patient with people and extremely empathetic with others and very helpful. You know, she's always trying to do whatever it takes to keep the peace, right?
Usually, unless Monroe is threatened.
Right. Yeah. We have seen her with her back up against the wall. And I think her inner fox came out today with this episode.
And I was like, about time, because those uh-huh. kids, I did not like them. They were such brats.
Yeah. Well, they had a skewed version of what reality should be. And she recognized that they couldn't help it. This was just the way they had brought themselves up. And they needed somebody to teach them a different way. You know, because all they had ever known was to scrimp and steal and take what they needed. And so that was their life, apparently.
Yeah, but,
we don't know what happened before 2 years ago.
Right. Their treatment, though, of people in general, just as to use them was...
Well, they were all bullies because they had this Vessan thing in their back pocket, right?
Right.
And that was their strength, though. So that was what they could pull in an emergency or to escape or to frighten, to get what they needed. It was all survival for them.
Yeah, and I get that, but they just made me really angry. I was so glad when she stood up to them because I was just like, you kids are brats and you need your spanking now.
Yeah, well, they needed a real parent and not just mother's love, but they needed a real parent to actually give them some guidance.
Yeah, and guess what?
That's the part that they didn't understand.
Right, yeah. Real parents have rules and... Mm-hmm. consequences for missed actions and that's right. How you learn is through the consequences.
Yep. Yep.
And they weren't used to that part.
Want. Yeah, that's right. Right.
Well, who does?
Well, but she was probably the first adult Vessan they had encountered.
Yeah,
which
apparently.
Again makes me wonder, where did they come from? Because are there that many orphaned Vessans out there?
Well, if there's Grimm out running around.
Yeah, it depends on how many Grimms are in the neighborhood.
Whacking off heads and asking questions later. Yeah.
But I did enjoy seeing her enough is enough moment.
Yeah.
Because I thought that was, it was deserved at that point. She was like, yeah, just whip some ass. ready to see these kids kind of figure out that they're not top of the food chain.
Yeah, and I still thought that they deserved a little bit more punishment than they ended up getting from our team. I mean,
well, you know, punishing children who don't have those kind of boundaries in their life, it may not be the most effective way to rehabilitate them.
No, but then again, letting them just totally off the hook, and now they're going to be recruited by this Vesson
Well,
army.
But they don't know that. They're not off the hook. They're in juvenile detention. The rest of the world thinks this is juvenile detention.
I still can't believe that our crew, knowing what they knew about these kids, weren't on top of their cases and following through.
To me, I think they should have had some kind of a caseworker, some kind of a child services person who, I mean, they, in fact, this would be a great character for them to bring in to the series later, is some kind of child protective services that is Vesson savvy.
Or Vesson herself, obvious. Well, would
exactly.
be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be good. And it would allow them to bring in another female character since they've been whacking off female characters right and left.
Well, or it could be a man. You know, let's not be too gender specific about it. But yeah, it would be nice to have another female.
They had Henrietta. They killed her.
Yeah, and I really miss Henrietta. She was a cool character.
Kelly Burkhart is probably gone.
Yeah.
Juliet is at least missing, if not dead. Trouble is only just now making her reintroduction or her, you know, making her comeback
right
into the series.
Yeah. So what do you think they're doing with Trouble, by the way?
I think they're training her. I don't know why in a freaking metal cell. Now there's a way to make somebody happy and want
well,
to be
they
on your side.
Her, right. So she's, here's another abduction.
Well, no, see, I don't know that she was abducted. And hear me out.
Okay, I'm listening.
I think that it's possible that she wasn't so much as abducted as just kind of taken with them. Like, I don't, you know, because I don't think they drug her, put chloroform or whatever on her face. I think she was taken, but I don't, you know, I still think that she was working with Chavez. I thought she was working with Chavez, but I don't know why she was then stuck in a metal. There's things that don't make sense, but of course I haven't been in the writer's room. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. It seems some things don't support the others.
Yeah.
Right now. So I'm going to have to go back and watch that scene where Juliet was killed and Nick was, drugged or whatever.
Yeah.
But it seemed like they were restraining Trouble against her will.
Yes, well, I think they didn't want her to interfere with what they were about to do, as in drugging Nick, because she would have objected to that fully. And she didn't have any chance to tell them that Nick was a Grimm, and they probably wouldn't have believed her at that point, because they had no reason to think that Nick was a Grimm. Because when Chavez had last interviewed him and so forth, he wasn't Grimm.
Right, right. Yeah, he had to bring Trouble in on the behind the two-way mirror to identify her. Or
right.
No.
Am
I thinking that?
No.
No,
she...
I'm thinking, that was the wrong scene, sorry.
But he had to use Trouble to identify Vesson when he didn't have his Grimmness. That's what I call it, his Grimmness.
Grimmness.
And I still thought, I mean, that's my theory, my speculation, is that the dart that Trouble shot Juliet with had a drug on it. I know she bled and she looked like she was dying, but I still think she was being put into some kind of a coma-like state. And that's why I thought that Trouble wasn't actually being abducted in that way, but she was obviously restrained and taken.
Yeah, so you think this is all just training on Trouble's behalf?
Yes and no. I think it is training, but why she's being held in solitary confinement inside a metal cell, that part I don't get.
Right. Yeah. Well, maybe next week we'll find out more about that. It looks like from the trailers that Trouble is out and about and Nick is involved and maybe catches up with her or saves her, rescues her, whatever.
Maybe you saw a longer trailer. All I saw for next week was the group that has some kind of a feather thing and they're killing each other or something. I don't know. I didn't know what was going
on. All right. Well, tune in next week when the feathers fly.
Here you go.
All right.
You want to give us our outro?
I will. I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in to Grimly Speaking. This is Cami Settle and Maya Aides signing out. Be sure to subscribe to Sci-Fi for Chicks on iTunes or via the RSS feed on scififorchicks.com. The email to write us is scififorchicks@scififorme.com. Our hotline is 573-42-SCIFI. That's 573-42-7243-4. I know that's too many numbers, but just keep dialing. And find us on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks. You can check out scififorme.com for reviews, news, and recaps, including some of the stuff that Maya and I do on the side, or maybe this is the side. We don't know yet. I recap The Librarians, and we both sit in on the Level 117 podcast, where we recap Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And the general Marvel universe.
Yes, or several of them, actually.
Yeah.
you can catch the podcast at Sci-Fi for Me Radio. It's on iTunes, and you can find a lot of podcasts there. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, YouTube, Google+, and Pinterest. Did I catch them all?
Yeah, and Pinterest is the Cosplay Diaries. That's just cosplay. Yep.
Tune in again. Thanks for listening. We will see you next week on Grimly Speaking.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.